Good morning. It's 8:45 a.m. on April 3rd, 2013. From again another chemtrailed up day here in the Pacific Northwest. This is yet another damn Wujo. This time we're going to do a Bitcoin breakdown. I'll try and stay on subject. The goal is to provide you with a context for Bitcoin, basically sort of a primer as to how it all works and how you can get involved, and some of the aspects of it that need to be sort of linked together in your head to make it all make sense. It's a very complicated technical approach to money, so we'll get into it real quick here. So making some tea and feeding the hummingbirds. I've got to keep two feeders going because we have two different kinds of hummers. We have Rufus and Anna's. One of them overwinters. I think the Rufus, they've been with us all winter. But anyway, and they're a bit territorial, so you have to have two feeders out there. Otherwise, they spend all their time chasing each other away from the feeder, and nobody gets any chow. It's amusing to watch, but it's not really progress. Anyway, Bitcoin as a context, okay? Bitcoin is to banking and currency what the internet is to information. So the internet allows for information to be liberated, if you will, and it allows for a unique level of information delivery that didn't exist before it. All other forms, books, et cetera, could be considered to be information delivery prior to the internet, but the internet provided this thing that didn't exist, and that was this human-to-human interaction, such that I could literally sit here in the Pacific Northwest and be connected to and received information directly from another human in Alaska, Russia, Africa, Antarctica, any place on the planet, and even potentially out in space. So this human-to-human characteristic of information didn't exist prior to the internet, without all kinds of intermediaries. So the whole intermediary of information, all that structure fell away when the internet came into existence. Even though the government is now 13, 14 years on to mass adoption of the internet, is now trying to, in all the different countries, trying to clamp down and control it, and undoubtedly is influencing it and so on. Nonetheless, the internet allows still, its function of allowing human-to-human contact supersedes and trumps all officialdom use of the media. And it is, in essence, bringing the officialdom to their knees because it allows free-flowing information and the validation of that information, as well as skepticism and rebuttal on a real-time and near-real-time basis that didn't exist prior to it. So Bitcoin is to the bankster occupation, the incredible bankster occupus that is trying to force a central bank on every country of the planet and force central banksterism down on everybody's throat. Bitcoin is to that structure as the internet was to the control of the media. So Bitcoin will cause the banking and currency structure to go away. Bitcoin as a context is the situation that Buckminster Fuller described in the 60s and 70s, where he said, systems are becoming so complex, we cannot have a revolution. What we have to do is to have a reinvention, and that the way that you alter your future is not through violent revolution and so on, but rather through inventing the system that will replace the one that's annoying you. So here we have a system where the bankster intermediaries, the criminal gang that supports the criminal gang at the top of the pyramid, by that I mean officialdom, all the politicians and the basic evil bastards that run government at all, and all the institutions, are supported basically financed by the bankster layer. And the bankster layer is eroding. So the erosion of it is occurring at a level of noticeability, let's put it that way. And we're starting to see it erode in a number of different places. The erosion is coming as a result of the exposure of the hyperinflation through Bitcoin. Now, the reason that Bitcoin can expose hyperinflation goes to the fact that it is this human-to-human communication form, really, because rather than a currency per se. There's all these different kinds of attributes that should be behind currencies, and everybody says, well, it's got to be backed by something. And all currencies, whether it's gold, silver, lead, force, a currency of seduction, and the currencies of paper, and any other form of currency that interacts between humans, ultimately comes down to a single attribute, and that is confidence. So if you have confidence in the paper that the Chinese give you in the 600 AD, then it becomes currency. If you don't, it is not. If you have confidence in the slaves, then they're currency. If you have confidence in your ability to turn them around as a prophet and so on. If you have confidence in any media, then it becomes the current through which your energy is transferred to another human. And that is the whole point of currency, is this human-to-human transaction. The point of currency is not for me to give a big portion of my life's work and blood to the banks in the form of fees, although that is their understanding of it, and that is the warped understanding that they forced on humanity these past, let's say, 70, 80 years with real vigor, and prior to that, they'd worked at it, getting it all set up. So the point of currency is this exchange between two humans. Bitcoin allows this human-to-human exchange without the blood-sucking parasites of the bank as an intermediary. It allows it to be done in a secure fashion. Yes, I acknowledge there have been raids against Bitcoin wallets and so on, and that does not diminish the Bitcoin concept itself, merely the implementation of the software that was being used in those particular instances at the time. And unlike the banking system, every act against a Bitcoin system strengthens the system as a whole, because we're all a bunch of paranoid fucks, and so we start upgrading our software when we find there's a level of vulnerability, eh? Plus, I'll get into that when we get into the Bitcoin mining. Okay, so Bitcoin is a human-to-human information exchange, and that information in this case brings along with it some notion of wealth that is in the future to be translated into a different form than the Bitcoin in the local environment. So no, people, my point in getting into Bitcoins and describing them all this time has never been that the Bitcoin itself was a anything other than the media for getting wealth to be transferred in some form from human to human and allowing a trade level without the parasitic action of the Zionistic banking structure in between. And that sort of gives you the context here. Bitcoin is a software implementation that is a in a sense, the description of Bitcoin could be aptly said to be a tunnel or a vehicle that allows you to, as an individual, to tunnel into a secure network and to exchange information about wealth with another individual anywhere on the planet, and to do so in a secure fashion without the intervention of any prying eyes, as well as without any blood-sucking parasitic banksterism involved. Now, note that banksters are terrible because they concentrate wealth into the parasite. They're terrible because they must destroy hundreds of millions of humans periodically in order to maintain their control system through what they call global warfare. And they're terrible because they continuously oppress the populace of the planet and destroy humanity's creativity by the needless depressions that they engineer. Because of their form of currency, and because they're bleeding off energy and money and everything with all their fees and manipulation and inflation, etc. Now, see, there's something else. There is no inflation within Bitcoin because the number is finite. It is not a Ponzi scheme. By definition, a Ponzi scheme is a scheme in which you take money from one unsuspecting fool, give a bunch of it to yourself, and use a little bit to pay the previous unsuspecting fool until the next unsuspecting fool comes along ad infinitum. There is no end to it until you're caught, and it grows and grows and grows in a grand pyramid. This is a planned deflationary thing, Bitcoin. It is known to have only 21 million bitcoins. However, each bitcoin can be subdivided into 100 million units, at which point a Satoshi becomes less than, I think, about an eighth of a cent if we were to transfer 1% of the transactions in Forex into Bitcoin. So, Bitcoin is a human-to-human exchange method that could be considered to be like internet chat, anything where you would talk to somebody in a secure fashion. It could be sort of like Skype. You can consider it to be a Skype kind of a thing. And now, this is a concept, Bitcoin is, the idea that we would have human-to-human currencies. These currencies have actually been inculcated into certain levels of our society because of video games in which currencies are involved. And the currencies are local to those video games. The people get used to the idea of a virtual currency, and they develop confidence in them because they've trusted them and they've worked in the past in their environment. And see, that's the thing. Bitcoin operates on trust, on confidence, just like the banking system as a whole. When the banks come along and steal your money through outright theft, as opposed to the more subtle form of inflation that they've been stealing it from you for the past 150 years, then you get a little bit upset. But there's still theft at that level. With Bitcoin, you don't get that kind of theft. You get raids or, you know, occasionally, but every time there's a raid against Bitcoin, the concept itself strengthens it against that level of vulnerability, and it won't repeat that vulnerability. And so it gets harder and harder and harder over time to steal from it. Plus, the nature of the system is such that it engenders cooperation and confidence and trust building by the way in which it's used, and the more people that use it, the more people are going to want to trust it, and there will be fewer attacks against it at a particular level, even within the criminal class. I'm talking the organized criminal, you know, Mossad, CIA, these kind of guys. Now, it is true that there were the connections to IntelQ. I've had a brief run-up against them myself. That in no way invalidates Bitcoin, nor does the idea that maybe the CIA stole a bunch of them during that particular raid. Yes, it was coincidental temporally. I have a hard time thinking that the CIA could mount an expedition that quickly, seeing how government is, I mean, literally within a day or so, seeing how fucked up government is in terms of getting big operations going. And also at the time, their technical astuteness is in some ways is at least demonstrably lacking. They may be hiding a level of astuteness that, you know, an acumen that they don't want to share, but it does not seem that they possess it from the evidence. Okay, so there's that. Now, Bitcoin as a concept, as a human-to-human method of exchange, needs a media through which this can occur. And so you will find that you will be offered a couple of different concepts here. And the concepts are basically that you have your bitcoins stored somewhere. You got to keep your bitcoins somewhere, just the way you got to keep your money somewhere in some other form. And in this case, they took the metaphor of a wallet, and so you will have a wallet. And this is where you will put your bitcoins at a personal level. Now, we'll get into acquiring bitcoins in a second, but let's say that you had a bitcoin and you wanted to store it somewhere. There's a number of different ways to approach this. And I've gone through a bunch of them over the past year or so. I've crashed a bunch of different software trying to see how recoverable it was, and I've got experience with that. So I have a great deal of confidence in the system as a whole. And let me describe the general sense, and then I'll describe the approach I've taken. In a general sense, there's sort of two approaches to a wallet. One is located on your laptop or your computer at home, and the other is on an internet server somewhere. Server-based wallets are, of course, more vulnerable to cracking, you know, this kind of thing, because you can turn your PC off and disconnect it from the net, and then no one can get at your Bitcoin wallet. Or you could dump all of your pertinent information onto a USB drive or a thumb drive and pull it out, and there you go. Nothing's left on your PC, and you can pack it around with you in your pocket or wear it on a keychain or something. So you have that level of security with your bitcoins. You need not keep them in a place that's insecure. Further, you can also do things that are really cool, like encrypting, but be careful. You know, if you start encrypting your Bitcoin wallet and so forth, make sure you really know your encryption software is compatible with whatever software you use for your wallet. So there's the online storage of your bitcoins and your personal storage. Now, the personal storage offers you security, but then you have the transaction time cost of not having the bitcoins available in a convenient form at a more convenient wallet. Now, so there might be a reason to have your bitcoins split up. Now, by this I mean, If you had an online wallet that had some bitcoins in it, you could use those bitcoins in a transfer and send it to someone, even if you were not at your PC where the bitcoins would be resident. And so you could log in from a local Starbucks, somebody else's PC, go to a... I've actually seen this one occur where a guy went to a garage sale at Craigslist and they negotiated a deal in bitcoins, and because he had the customer, I don't know what he was buying actually. He bought a lot of crap, but I don't know what he paid for in bitcoins. But he used the seller's computer to log into his account at a online facility and transferred the bitcoin from there, and then wiped it out of the cash, and he was good to go. You know, there's that kind of transaction, and then there's bitcoin transactions that occur. One other form of them, which is that you can take your bitcoins with you in the form of USB drives and stuff and use them at restaurants and on various different kinds of machines and stuff, actually transact bitcoin commerce there. So you have basically two forms of a wallet, online or in your PC. There are variants in both. Now, there's some cost involved in both of the online wallet. Obviously, there's an online company that's making trying to facilitate a transaction for you, and they're going to try and collect a fee for what they're going to do. Different than a bank, though, because they're not storing anything. They don't have any responsibility for your wealth. They transfer the bitcoins to you on demand. They're in a bitcoin form, so it's not like it stays digital the whole time. They offer some value to you, though, because many of these online wallets are also places where you can purchase bitcoins, such as Mt. Gox, which is in Poland, which does, I think, about 77% of the bitcoin purchasing traffic now, and other places like Coinbase, BuyInstant, and a few others, or BitInstant, and a few others. Check them out before you get involved with them, and we'll discuss purchasing those in just a second, bitcoins, I mean. So some of these places would have a online wallet for you, and the idea is that you would upload money to them in some other form of a currency, gold, silver, rubles, yuan, whatever, and they would take these uploaded currencies and convert them to you and buy a bitcoin for you. And that's what they do. They go out and they find a bitcoin at current market value, and then they buy it and sell it back to you. And so and then transfer the bitcoin to you, and there's a little fee involved. So they actually are acting as a facilitator between a seller and a buyer, very much like eBay. They are not like a bank. They're much more like an auction house that takes a fee for providing the common ground for the seller and buyer to meet with an extra level of surety and confidence in the transaction. And so Mt. Gox and some of these other places are... because they don't own bitcoins, they're not making the bitcoins, they simply have to buy them, there's a limited supply. Thus, by the way, you see that the prices are rising, because a lot of people want to get into bitcoins, and there ain't that many of them. Okay, so that's where we're at. Two different kinds of wallets. Local, now if you've got a local one on your PC and you want to do a transaction, you want to send me a bitcoin or a fraction of it, some of the Satoshis. Bitcoins were nominally invented by this guy by the name of Satoshi Nakamura, who everybody really thinks is this Russian mathematician who had won the Poincaré contest, but then has gone on to other stuff. Anyway, the small fractional units are Satoshis. So say you wanted to send me a couple of Satoshis. Well, you would need an address. Just like if you were going to try and mail me a check, you'd need an address. Or any other way of communication, you need an address to get to me. It's not an IP address. It's not any of that kind of thing. It's an address within the Bitcoin network. And see, this is where it gets a little bit complicated for people. Not only do I store all the Bitcoins in my wallet, but all of the transactions are stored relative to how the network processes all of this stuff. So my wallet is recoverable based on its interaction and syncing up with the network. And so we'll get into that in a second. Now, that's one other advantage of the online wallets is they're continually synced to the network, and they actually provide surety in this part of the loop in the Bitcoin, which is the proof of work. And so these online wallets actually act as continuous proof and provide linkages in the network that are really cool. So anyway, though, On my local wallet, if somebody wanted to send me some bitcoins, they would need an address. And so we would communicate one way or another, and they would get an address. I'd either have it up on my webpage, or they'd ask me, and I'd tell them over the phone, or I would send them one of those little QR tags, or I'd send them, in some form, I'd send them this long label. And it's just basically a series of numbers and letters that relate to a particular spot within the database that is called my wallet, whether it's online or whether it's local. And once they had that address, whether the wallet is online or local, then they can send money, and the money goes to that particular wallet within the network itself. And the network of all of these computers all working together is what facilitates the Bitcoin in lieu of the central processing that used to exist and be necessary from the central banks. So basically, we've decentralized the central bank main function, which is the processing of checks between humans, wherein they took huge fees and loaded the whole system up with fees until the point that they were basically a bunch of blood-sucking parasites, and we just can't stand them anymore. And we got to get rid of the bastards. And so universe pokes a hole in it and says, somebody invent something, and here's an idea, and oops, there comes Bitcoin, and now we've got this anti-bankster currency out there, this currency of the resistance to bankster oppression of the planet. And Bitcoin works as a human-to-human facilitator at a layer that is the equivalent of all of the work and shit that the central banks used to do. Now, it does it in a secure fashion by the encryption that's done at the network layer and within the wallets and so on. But you can always add further encryption the more to suit your level of paranoia. You know, dial it up as many times as you want with extra level of encryption of your wallet. And so there you go. Basically, you've got a wallet. And in any kind of a transaction, it's like you go to a garage sale, you want to buy my old bicycle, you're going to open up your wallet, you're going to take out your currency, and you're going to hand it to me. I'm going to take it and put it into my wallet as you take the bicycle. And there we go. Now, in Bitcoin world, you're going to have to work out how you're going to get the bicycle to each other. But once you open up your wallet and send me the money, it's a done deal. It's not like you can come back and through some kind of an intermediary demand that money back. So there's no PayPal kind of surety or any of that kind of thing, and you got to act as an adult and make sure you know what you're doing with kinds of transactions and don't get ripped off, because there are no third parties to guarantee surety here, and there will be nasty humans that want to take advantage of other humans because these are warped individuals and don't know they shouldn't do that. So you just need to be a little wary. You know, the universe is filled with deception, as nature tells us, and so you've got to be good at discerning and seeing the deception and overcoming it. But basically, you'll be all right. It's like living down south with cottonmouths and other poisonous snakes. You move down there in the southern North American hemisphere, you learn to recognize these bastards because they can bite you in the ankle and cause you to die. But, you know, once you know them, you avoid them, it's sort of okay. And that's kind of the issue of all the snakes on the internet relative to the Bitcoin thing. You know, it's a rough world out there, but as adults, we can safeguard ourselves, and I think Bitcoin is really cool. Now, let me speak to some examples here. I've deliberately and accidentally several times crashed my wallet, and I've used several different bits of software, each one of which has been able to recover the wallet within its own structure. So the confidence level I have of being able to recover transactions, even hundreds of them. Now, my wallet software that I use has to rebuild each and every transaction through your entire history based on the keys that you save off. So it may take a while to sync up. When I had to recover a year's worth of transactions here a little while ago just to upgrade to the new version of software, it was about 3 hours before it was finally done, going through each and every one of the transactions, validating them, and so on. So this whole issue of syncing up your wallet with the net, don't let it frustrate you. Now, it actually takes a while to sync up. Once you get in to the groove, so to speak, and your transactions and your software is more frequently on the net, you'll find that it takes less time due to a whole lot of factors I don't want to get into. That can be daunting at first, but it need not be a barrier to getting into Bitcoins and participating in this. So now, wallets. There's Mt. Gox. There's Coinbase. If you want to get an idea of this sort of thing, you can go to Bitcoin Magazine. There's a link on the Half Past Human site off on the left to that. And you can use that as a resource for finding all different kinds of online wallets of various different forms. And then if you wanted to find wallets that you can use on your laptop, you can do hunts on Google and so on for Bitcoin wallets and download. And you'll see all different kinds. Now, validate them, check them for viruses. I like a lot of the open source stuff. Before I download anything, I always go and put in whatever name of software I'm looking at, the plus sign and the word reviews in Google or Yahoo or some of the other search engines, and get and read the reviews of the software, because frequently you'll find out that somebody will say, hey, don't download this, it's got this piece of crud in it, you don't want that. And then if I can validate that particular review was indeed accurate, well, maybe I don't want that piece of software and I'll go look at another one. Take whatever usual steps you take for discernment in terms of the apps you're going to use with this approach. But you can get a wallet free, offline. Download it to your PC, your phone, or whatever. Now, there will undoubtedly be some form of transaction fee in using that wallet as it sends stuff back and forth. These people are not spending their time developing the software for nothing, except in the open source community, where you'll find all manner of open source software wallets that can be used for free. Some of them, you have to look at the settings for transaction fees and to see how they're handling that component of the interaction with the network. There are several that will get you through the whole process if you're willing to do the work with no sending or receiving fee component at all. But you've got to be involved in a lot more in your software. So you're going to pay for convenience with the wallets. Some of the Satoshi demands are relatively small. I have a wallet that uses one Satoshi, 100 millionth part of a Bitcoin per transaction. And these people are going to be fundamentally wealthy as this goes forward. And that's not an issue for me. They provide a good service. They're continually updating it. And they're continually making the wallet more secure. And I find that is worth paying for. And they've got some brains behind them. And I'm using the multi-bit wallet, by the way. I've used several. And I just happen to like this one and have found it easier than some of the others for people that I've turned on to Bitcoin, and now I unfortunately I'm actually sort of in a situation where I'm supporting other individuals with it. But it's a very good chunk of software, and I like the fact that the multi-bit guys are working their butts off to improve the product as they go forward, and that they're from an open source community approach to all of this. So good guys and a good wallet to use. There are many others that are as valid or equally good, but I haven't kept up with them in, like, say, the last 8 months or so. So I'm hesitant to offer much in the way of names for that. Anyway, so you get the wallet. Next stage is to sync up to the network, and then you got to figure out a way to get a Bitcoin or some portion of a Bitcoin. And this is where the talk is going to get a little bit squirrely, in the sense we're going to have to go chasing around the tree a bunch. Okay, so before we go into how you would go about buying a Bitcoin, let's talk for a minute about mining Bitcoins or creating them. Bitcoins are created at a known algorithmic rate. A certain number of Bitcoins are created every 10 minutes. The planet has been all of time has been divided into 10-minute blocks for the network purposes of considering this particular thing that's called a hashing algorithm. And you needn't know anything more about it, but the hashing algorithm for Bitcoin is very robust, and it's also self-healing in multiple ways. And the mining process aids the self-healing part of the network, because the miners are basically, it's not guys with picks and shovels moving dirt, it's people with software and electricity moving bits and bytes. And they're hunting through vast quantities of numbers, looking for specific characteristics, and whenever they can get a bunch of them to match, then they can yell bingo and create a part of a Bitcoin. Actually, they yell Satoshi and they create part of a Bitcoin. And so they're doing this, and at the same time that they're doing this, these miners, now, so there's an incentive to this. Basically, if the cost of electricity is less than the price of the Satoshi you create, you make, quote, money in the, or profit on it. You create wealth in this process, in the same form of wealth from proof of work in mining gold, where you'd go and haul yourself to, haul your physical body to Alaska, endure harsh conditions, dig up a bunch of yellow metal, and haul your ass back to San Francisco and spend the money on pies, food, hotels, and whores. Anyway, and, you know, get it into circulation like a good miner should. Now, miners today, I'm not commenting on what they spend their bitcoins on. That's not my part of this, but here's how they create them. They are basically creating them with the same proof of work as a miner in ancient past. Only here, they're using electricity as proof of work and all this machinery in the form of software overlaid on computers. Now, in the process, the miners form a part of the network that is what makes the Bitcoin network robust and self-healing and self-growing and protecting at this particular level. And that is that as Bitcoins become more valuable, more people will want to mine them, more mining software will be set up, more reinforcement of the hashing algorithms and the support behind it, and it becomes a, because of the nature of the algorithm underlying it all and the way in which the code is put together, as vulnerabilities are exposed over time, such as, you know, the rare occurrences of that you may run into technical terms like block splits and fractures, as things like this occur due to how the computers actually are functioning, and I don't want to go down there, down to the primary and zero layers of the computer hardware. But basically the idea is that the network itself becomes more robust over time because more and more computers are added to try, just out of the incentive of trying to make these Satoshis. And it just makes your network that much more robust and resilient. And so Bitcoins actually function better as we go forward. And so the more miners out there, the faster the network responds and so on. And in fact, the more wallets that are online, the faster the network operates, the more transactions that are going through it, the cleaner the transaction rates, the cleaner the history of clearing, the fewer number of steps involved, and yet the number of redundant steps can be multiplied almost infinitely because you have the capacity within the network itself. So your level of redundancy in case of any kind of crashing at a personal or a regional level rises significantly. It's really a cool damn algorithm. I don't know why I got off on that component of it, but I'm just very admiring of the minds that put together a lot of the code. You're a miner. You set up some software. You get all these things running. You plug it in. You get your network nodes. You start paying people for online access, and you start contributing to the global economy as you create bitcoins. And you create the Satoshis, and you start racking them on up, and you support the network in the back end of things, so to speak. And that's where the Bitcoins come from. Now, at that point, you've got a Bitcoin that did not cost you the nominal currency value of a Bitcoin as a miner, and so it cost you the electricity, the sweat, the time, the proof of work, getting your brain cells wrapped around the concepts, getting your system running, etc. And you're up and running, and you're starting to create some value, then you've got something to sell. And so that's how the Bitcoins come into the system, is that at that point, these people need to be compensated to pay their electric bill in some other form of local currency, etc. And so they'll start, there's a natural incentive for them to sell Bitcoins into the system, or sell Satoshis in. So now you're on the other end of things. You're not a miner. You're Sean's friend Linda down there in Los Angeles, and you just want to set up a wallet. And so you call up a guy, and he comes on over, and he sets up a wallet for you on your laptop, and you know, you pay him a few dollars, and it's like, okay, you're good to go there, and it all works just fine. And you sync up to the network. Now the thing is, okay, how do I get a Bitcoin? Well, there's a couple of different ways to go about it. Actually, there's a number of different ways. You'll find that some of the miners that had started off in mining Bitcoin a long time ago don't bother with the issues of trying to sell Bitcoins on websites or this sort of, that they don't bother to put them into the system that way. You will occasionally find them on Craigslist. You'll also find people, for whatever reason, that want to sell Bitcoins on Craigslist. So I know a number of individuals that just maintain adverts on Craigslist in the want to buy area and other lists like Craigslist, where they just say want to buy Bitcoins and, you know, willing to pay average daily weight or that kind of thing, and in their local currencies. So that's one way of doing it. Now we're starting to see Bitcoin ATMs appear, so you'll see that those are going to pop up all around. Another way to buy them is to go to Mt. Gox. Now, Mt. Gox handles about something less than 80% of all the Bitcoin purchases over this past year. I don't know how it'll happen in the future because the whole Bitcoin world is going to fracture and just go basically batshit up, as we say up here in the Northwest, over this next few months and into the next year. So now the Bitcoin, assuming that electricity continues, etc. So the Bitcoin sales at Mt. Gox are a slightly different critter. Mt. Gox is located in, the operators of the site are located in Poland. You basically have to link a bank account to them to get money to them. But you go to Mt. Gox, you create an account, and you're basically creating an online wallet. And in one part of your wallet, you'll put your local currency. You'll put Great British Pounds, you'll put euros, you'll put dollars, you'll put whatever. And on the other side of your wallet, you'll eventually use to buy Bitcoins. Now, you'll end up paying going rate plus some small fraction for the Mt. Gox transaction fee, as you would in any kind of a market, you know. But unlike a bank, the fees and so forth are not these blood-sucking levels all over, you know, at every level of the transaction. Plus, the banks create and devalue the money that they're dealing with. That's not the case here. The Bitcoins are actually going to increase in value until a certain condition is reached, which I can talk about later in another Wujo. But will potentially increase for a number of years as long as electricity and humanity keeps going on its present tack. Mt. Gox, you go there, you create, it's a wallet, you create an account, it's free, you've registered, and then you start getting yourself authenticated to them one way or another. One way to do it is to find out how close you are to one of their 10,000 plus ATMs, and you can go and feed in a bunch of cash of your local currency into the ATM and send it to the Mt. Gox account. Then the cash sits there while you then go ahead and arrange to purchase the Bitcoins that you want to buy at Mt. Gox. Then you're going to actually have to sit there and allow the process at Mt. Gox to take off. And this is where some people get really distressed, because they might come on in and find that Bitcoins were $141 when they put in their buy order, but they don't get them delivered to them until, you know, or they get the Bitcoins delivered and they find out that they couldn't buy as many Bitcoins as they wanted because they didn't have as much money in their account, because by the time the actual transaction was able to be processed, the Bitcoin was at 160 or something, you know. Or maybe they could buy more because Bitcoins had temporarily fallen in value relative to their local currency. So it's a true marketplace, and so it's not like you're going to be quoted a fixed price by a central person that already has this item in inventory and is able to sell it to you at that price because they know they've got it there. This is a much more fluid environment. So it's a can be a little disconcerting, although it's much more honest in many ways than anything dealing with the banks. So you want to buy your Bitcoins, you go to Mt. Gox, you get registered. It can take 10 to 12 days depending on the approach and depending on what you have to provide them in the way of certification, certs and assurances, as we say in the phone industry, that you have to provide some form of validation of who you are and all of this kind of stuff, basically to say you're not a crook and that you do live at these places and can get money to them. This is assuming you're not putting money in through their ATM and you're going to have some kind of an electronic to peer-to-peer transaction with them out of your bank account. And that's sort of where you're at. PayPal does that kind of thing to allow you to sell and buy on eBay, transfer money back and forth through PayPal around the planet, as long as it's in dollars and the other traditional Zionistic bankster currencies that they handle. Now, Mt. Gox does not do the PayPal kind of thing. It's not a central clearinghouse in the way that PayPal is, where those kind of transactions take place. It's much more like your online wallet with a little bit extra in that these guys have some Bitcoins to sell, and you can purchase them at the going rate. You'll find that this model is effectively duplicated in all the other Bitcoin purchasing areas. I've personally used Coinbase. I'm not yet validated with Mt. Gox. I've never gone the Mt. Gox route. We are here at Half Past Human doing that. there are issues in getting validated because there's like 7,000 or 8,000 people ahead of us. It can take, as I say, 10 to 12 days to do so. But then once you've done that, you can jump into the marketplace full bore and start buying and selling vast quantities of bitcoins, and there aren't that many limits and so on. A lot of the other places that are not Mt. Gox have limits on them because they are also scrambling to buy bitcoins to sell to you or to make available to you to purchase from someone else. So there's the online wallet approach, which would be like Coinbase and BitInstant and Mt. Gox for purchasing bitcoins to put into your wallet, and Craigslist. You can buy them at that level. You can also advertise for them and you know, just put out, I know a guy that's got a website, I don't think I've ever been there, he just told me about it, where he just keeps on his website that, hey, I buy bitcoins, you know, y'all let me know and I'll transfer stuff to you. So now there's another way to get bitcoins, and that's to sell hard goods for bitcoins. And so you'll find that that's the traditional route in the Bitcoin world, because bear in mind now, Bitcoin is a pirate currency. It wasn't intended to be a pirate currency. None of the guys that wanted to make it are pirates, but the pirates of the planet adopted it way early, and it's been the currency of choice for transactions that are illegal in many jurisdictions that one may undertake in a place called Silk Road on the torrents. I won't get into those. If you're not familiar with that world, don't go there. You know, stay up or level in the internet world and don't bother with this. But bitcoins have been proven in the pirate world and have risen up out of those marketplaces. And we've seen some much more legitimate marketplaces emerge that are Bitcoin central. And so you'll find places like Bitmit, B-I-T-M-I-T, which is an auction house where you do transactions in bitcoins. So if you've got something of value and your universe wants to reward you, you could go there and auction this stuff off and accept payment in bitcoins. And it's very much like dealing with eBay and so forth. There's a slight transaction fee for their participation in setting up the marketplace for you. And basically, it's a human-to-human interaction thereafter. They offer some level of support through the transaction, and you can investigate that for yourself. I do know a number of individuals that have made significant bitcoins off of that. One person does just marvelous work with alpaca fibers, and over the past couple of years, she's been auctioning off all kinds of things there, and has amassed enough bitcoins that she'll be a multimillionaire as this goes forward. Anyway, so there's things like Bitmit. You'll also find that there are other methods of receiving and selling in Bitcoin. So say that you've got a website and you're already selling something. Well, just go to some place like Coinbase or one of these other online wallets and or generate addresses and slap them up on your website and say, you know, here's my price in Bitcoins today for this particular service, product, or whatever. And so just start participating in the economy that way, and you need not purchase the Bitcoins. You could sell your goods and services for Bitcoins in lieu of dollars or, you know, yen or pounds or whatever you're currently taking in terms of currency for those efforts. This is one of the Bitcoins, by the way, I believe is one of the creativity centers that we've forecast for a long time about this upcoming renaissance, because it takes the oppressors out of the way. You'll note that in the last, since 1966, I think it is, or 69 here in the United States, the statistics are out now, all of the wealth that's been created basically has gone to the upper 0.1%, and everybody else has gotten $59 in income growth over all this time. And it's because we're all working our asses off and dying young to support the blood-sucking parasites that are at the center of the system. These reptilian hordes are evil bastards, and we need to starve them. So we can starve them by opting out of the system. And just like Buckminster Fuller said, the best way to do this is to not engage with the evil ones, simply invent a system that replaces them. And we've done that with the internet in terms of the information layer, because now we can get information without them intruding. And we can now interact and transact business with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, by the way, is not the only crypto or encrypted currency out there. There's a number of others that are equally good. Some of them are growing quite fast. You need to be very astute, though, as you go through this and validate all the steps and so on, that in terms of which ones you're getting involved with, and where one might want to put their stores of wealth. Bitcoin offers a couple of advantages over some of the others in that its initial testing in the world of the pirate zones of the torrents has provided it a level of confidence that a few of these others will have to work to gain. So just on that basis alone, on the confidence at a human-to-human level, I think you'll find more transactions in Bitcoin for some period of time than these other currencies. But that also, again, is another advantage to the other currencies if you're of a mind to go that route. Bitcoin as a issue with taxation and intergovernmental interaction is less of an issue in my mind. I find that the government, I think, is destroying its credibility. And because basically it's come down to this, our government in here in the North American continent has now said that they have the right to incarcerate us without trial in perpetuity forever, and they have the right to kill us from the sky with no notice with this drone, no trial, no due process, and they have the right to steal all of our money. So it's like, how is that different from the mafia or any other organized criminal gang, accepting the level of technology involved and the, quote, officialness of their sanction? In my mind, the government has overstepped any kind of bounds, any claim to moral authority, and has no sway over my actions anymore and can make no claims on me as in any way of representing me, and they've, in fact, declared themselves to be my enemy. Anybody that comes on up to you and says, hey, I can kill you by sending your name over to this assassination czar, or by telling the CIA, I want you, snuffed out with cancer, or I want you, irradiated until you have a heart attack. Well, that fellow has made themselves my enemy. Then they made that entire organization my enemy. And, wasn't any of my doing. I'm not the terrorist here. They are. And so I'm just taking the, proper moral stance of a sovereign citizen, a self-aware, self-actualizing human on planet Earth and saying basically, hey, fuck y'all. And by the way, I'm going to start using Bitcoin. So, anyway, enough on that particular rant. Now, Bitcoin is a primer. This will give you a sort of an idea of the context of it all. If you're not a software geek, you don't really care too much about the network component of it. What you care about is your interaction with it. So, what you're going to want to do is to find the wallet that suits you. Spend the day. Download a bunch of them. Look at the reviews. Check the different features that may or may not suit you. You may need the ability to do roaming, but you may not need these other features that it's got. So have a look at what's available in the many different wallets. People are inventing new styles all the time. Good places are like SourceForge. That's open source. You'll see all different kinds of good stuff there. The advantage to open source is that when someone provides it, they provide the source code. So you see what kind of crud they're putting in there. You may not read code, but lots of us other guys do read code. And if we do and we find crap in there, we'll post it and say, hey, wait a second, there's crap in this code. Don't use this. So I like the open source for that reason. But that is not a limit. There's a lot of really good commercial wallets out there. Some very, very, very slick ones that have all kinds of features to sync it up with your phone and do things I don't particularly need. So I can't recommend them. But I do recommend the process of educating yourself in looking at the various different kinds of wallet software and seeing the services that they can offer. And many of them, you can do this just by reading through their website and looking at the screenshots, and you needn't download and install it. There are, of course, the issues of uninstalling some of the stuff after you've got it in there and going through that sort of rigmarole. But once you've done your research and you've narrowed it down to a couple, you can try them and see which one is most effective for you. And then I encourage people to look at BitMit and some of the other auction houses and other stores in which you can exchange. Actually, some of the places will even do... depending on where you're at, they'll do local pickup and exchange of bitcoins for things like gold. Gold and silver. So again, that's not my recommendation, by the way. I'm personally of the opinion that we've been waiting for the hyperinflation to show up in order for it to rip the whole system to bits and allow gold and silver to come out from underneath the oppression that has held them down so long and so far. In my opinion, silver should be about 175 or more right now at a bare minimum based on the conditions that are going on. within the debasement of the currency by the fucktards that are running everything. So, you know, the evil cabal, blood-sucking tick bastards at the top. So in any event, I've got two silver coins, and I'm not going to sell them to get a Bitcoin, which is kind of stupid because Bitcoins will accelerate much more rapidly than silver initially. And it's expected that mathematically the Bitcoins could reach in the $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 per Bitcoin within a short period of time, just based on the expected flood of interest as Bitcoins cross the gap, as we say in the software business, or crossing the chasm. The Bitcoin rate of increase will be much more rapid, but if we lose electricity with a global coastal event, which the global coastal event is forecast to make electricity a difficult commodity for us here in the Pacific Northwest, but it may not in any way be forecasting that for any other part of the planet. We just don't have that understanding at all. And so there may be electricity and Bitcoins that are operating throughout Europe, the east part of the United States, Africa and Asia and so on, just not in the Pacific Northwest because we've been isolated due to a large earthquake. That's just our understanding of what our forecast is. So for our particular situation up here, I'm keeping my Bitcoins on my laptop and on, backed up on the little thumb drives and that kind of stuff. But I'm also keeping my two silver coins because I expect that the there will be a difficulty for me to reconnect until sometime, if we get a large earthquake here before May 20th, as we're expecting, there will be some level of difficulty for me to reconnect and make these Bitcoins of any use to me afterwards. And that's just merely because our area is more or less described as being isolated through lack of electricity. And I have no forecast of what the electric levels will be in any other part of the nation, any other part of the continent, any other part of the planet. But I'm making the assumption that, the electrical systems are somewhat robust and that they will survive. As we've seen in Russia, we had the meteorites come down as were forecast by the remote viewers. They caused lots of damage. People ran around, lots of people injured, but it didn't destroy the infrastructure. The global coastal event, it may do a lot of damage, lots of people running around, a lot of people fleeing, may even be a large number of deaths, and it may be a large amount of infrastructure damage, but it won't necessarily bring down the global infrastructure per se. And so I think Bitcoins will persist in the same form of human-to-human communication that we've got now, in terms of its, trend line. I think that's about it. It's a little primer for Bitcoins. So as a quick little rundown, Bitcoin is human-to-human communication that allows you to discuss wealth and transactions. Bitcoin has an internal network to allow the communications that's resilient and is a self-policing network. You keep your Bitcoins in your wallet as you would at your any other kind of currency. In this case, your wallet can recover your currency if it gets destroyed under some circumstances. If you get totally garbaged, you can even, I've seen people extract data off of damaged hard drives, and I know a guy here locally that has got some really cool machinery for doing just that, and I've done it myself when I was working network stuff and for government. And so you can even recover off damaged hard drives, so it's quite recoverable down to some level, but multiple backups are pretty sure that you're going to be able to recover without too much trouble. It's recoverable that way, whereas, if you lose your wallet over the side of the boat, whatever was in it is gone. Here, if you had your wallet on a thumb drive and you lost over the side of the boat, big deal. You go home to whatever software you use to put it on that thumb drive and run that again, and there you go. You can recover your wallet. So it adds that level of robustness to currency. The human-to-human component of it allows for the transactions to occur without any intervening parties, but most of the wallet software is self-supporting one way or another and will try and get a fee from you one way or another, and you can just examine and pay whatever fees you're comfortable with for the level of service provided. They're fair, usually. I mean, the stuff I've run into has been extremely modest. Let's see, any other pertinent stuff. More and more places are setting up to accept Bitcoins, but we're in kind of a little conundrum here, or a reality I want to say comedic play of irony, because more and more places will set up to accept bitcoins, but fewer and fewer people will be willing to release them until we get a price stabilization that seems realistic. And that price stabilization that seems realistic is way up from where they're at now. So, you know, I'm hesitant to buy a pair of socks with my bitcoins, because, you know, if it were a force for bitcoins, as it has been in the past for some of these alpaca socks, and bitcoins go to be $50,000 each, well, damn, that's one hell of a pair of expensive socks. And that's the mental issue that a lot of people are facing with bitcoins. I suspect that this situation psychologically will continue through the process of the early flush of the mainstream adoption of it. So as long as there's this fever to get into bitcoins, it'll continue to push them up more as an investment vehicle. And so the few people will be more and more reluctant to spread the Satoshis around. But then it'll break loose as the bank system falls to pieces around us. Then the bitcoins and other encrypted currencies like this, human-to-human, will flourish in terms of transactions, because you'll be able to have transactions down into the less than a penny, actually, I think. If we got 4 or 5% of the planet's wealth into bitcoins, each Satoshi, I was told, would have to be about a nickel, so to accommodate that. So just to give us an idea of the perspective. Anyway, so I expect bitcoins to be sought after for some time, and they would be, there's a number of different ways to get at them. A lot of people I know are getting into the mining field and having success. It's an issue I've discussed in another Wujo about, in terms of the luck involved and this kind of thing, but mathematically you will generate some level of Satoshis, and the issue is whether it's going to, at this point it is worth the work, but it's the issue for you is the cost involved in getting set up and so on. But mining is a very good network supporting activity and should be encouraged. And as I say, will be profitable for some time as long as there's this rush to get into the bitcoins. And I can't estimate how many people are interested in them now. We're just barely scratching the surface of the mainstream financial press. It's not really entered into the mainstream media that's controlled by the banksters. They don't want it to ever show up there. The minute it does there, you can pretty much assume the banks are done. Kind of like the way Walter Cronkite came on to national news way back when and said, Mr. President, no one supports your death camps in Vietnam. And so they had to stop doing that. When bitcoins show up on your evening news here in North America, they will essentially at that point be the mainstream, and the bankers will be remnants of history, and they'll just wake up and discover that one day. They're not that there won't be some banksters that were astute enough to get into bitcoins, because there are a bunch of these guys that did. It doesn't matter, though, the way it plays out. Their role will, as a class, will be relegated to a historical discussion of how in the hell can we let these fuckers do this. Anyway, guys, so there's your Bitcoin primer as best I can do under these circumstances. I got to get in out working my grow dome at the moment. That's something else. If you're not mining your Bitcoins, you should be out working on your grow domes and your gardens. Every bite of food you grow yourself is money you take from a banker's pocket. Thank you.